The human genome has 20,000 protein coding genes. The human body has 37 trillion cells and 86 billion neurons producing consciousness. The genome did not specify consciousness, it specified proteins. Where did the rest come from? That gap between specification and emergence is the rendering problem. And it appears structurally identical in organizations and brands.
Four things today. The three-layer hierarchy that all rendering problems share. Specification, implementation, emergence. Three sources of the extra information that appears after rendering. The rendering hierarchy across four domains, the same pattern in biology, organizations, brands, and careers. And why recognizing this changes what design actually means. You do not specify the output, you specify the constraints.
Wow. Okay. Welcome to this deep dive. I mean, I have to admit, when I first read through the briefs and, you know, the research papers we gathered for this one, my head started spinning just a little bit.
Yeah. It's a lot of ground to cover.
It really is. We are talking about connecting human consciousness, cellular biology, corporate org charts, luxury brand strategies, and even your own personal resume into one unified mathematical reality.
Right. Which sounds completely crazy until you see the math.
Exactly. So for you listening, whether you are managing a team of 50 people, trying to build a startup, shaping a brand's identity, or honestly just trying to navigate your own career, the concepts we are exploring today are totally going to change the underlying physics of how you approach planning.
Okay, let's unpack this, because what we are really looking at here is a fundamental shift in how we understand complex systems, right? We're moving away from this illusion of total control.
We have to. The control was always an illusion anyway.
Yeah. So to start, we need to break down this universal three-layer hierarchy. You mentioned this is present in all rendering problems.
Yeah.
What exactly are these three layers?
So every rendering problem, and I mean regardless of the domain you are looking at, shares the exact same foundational architecture. It operates across three distinct stacked layers.
The first layer is the specification. You can think of this as the compressed source code of the system. It is a bounded, enumerable set of rules or instructions or parameters.
When you say bounded and enumerable, you just mean it has a finite end, mm-hmm. right? Like I can literally count the pages in a manual or, you know, count the genes in a sequence.
Exactly. It is finite. And crucially, you can inspect it in its entirety. You can read the brand guidelines from cover to cover. You can map the entire genome. You can audit the business process document. That is the specification.
Makes sense.
But then we move to the second layer, which is the implementation. This is the rendered output. It is the realized physical or operational system that is built from that initial specification. And the critical property here, the thing that sets up the entire problem we are discussing today, is that the implementation has vastly greater descriptive complexity than the specification.
Vastly greater descriptive complexity. Okay, let's translate that into English for a second. You mean it takes way more information to describe the thing that was built than it took to describe the instructions to build it?
Precisely. Huh. It contains, orders of magnitude more information. Think about it like a one-page recipe for a cake.
Okay, I like cake.
Right. So the recipe is your specification, but the actual baked cake, the specific chemical bonds that form, the exact microscopic air pockets trapped in the sponge, the precise gradient of browning on the crust. If you had to write down the exact physical state of that finished cake, it would take volumes of encyclopedias.
Oh, wow. Yeah, the actual physics of the cake.
Exactly. The implementation is overwhelmingly more complex than the spec.
That makes total sense. And then we get to the third layer, which is emergence.
Yes. Emergence refers to the properties that appear in the implementation layer, but were never actually mentioned, coded, or written down in the specification.
Wait, so you're saying these properties just sort of materialize out of thin air?
Not by magic, no. They materialize by interaction. In the scientific literature, this specific type of phenomenon is referred to as weak emergence.
Weak emergence.
Right. It means that the emergent properties are theoretically derivable from the micro-level dynamics of the system. If you had a supercomputer the size of the universe, you could trace exactly how they happened. But, and this is the key, you cannot deduce them simply by looking at the specification alone.
Oh, I see.
You have to actually run the system or simulate the entire environment perfectly to see what happens. The instructions don't contain the final reality.
Okay, I want to make this super concrete for everyone listening. I want to test this hierarchy to see if I'm really getting it. Let's look at biology first. If we map this out, my DNA is the specification, right? That's the compressed source code.
Correct. Roughly 20,000 protein coding genes.
Right. Then the human body with its 37 trillion cells, the bones, the blood, the tissue, that is the implementation.
Yes. That's the massively complex rendered output.
And the emergence would be, well, consciousness. My thoughts, my memories, my subjective experience firing across 86 billion neurons. Are you seriously telling me my DNA has absolutely zero instructions for my brain being conscious? It didn't write a single line of code for my personality?
It did not. Your genome codes for proteins. It specifies the sequence of amino acids. It does not contain a schematic for a memory or a feeling of joy or the, you know, the philosophical concept of a self.
That is just wild to think about.
It is. The consciousness emerges from the staggering complexity of the implementation, those 86 billion neurons interacting in real time. The genome just set up the initial conditions.
That is mind-bending. Okay, but does this actually apply to human-made systems? Like, have we accidentally replicated this biological gap in the way we do business?
We haven't just accidentally replicated it. It is a mathematical inevitability of any complex system. Let's look at business through the lens of organizational schema theory, or OST.
Okay, OST.
Think of a massive corporation. The business process specifications, the standard operating procedures, the employee handbooks, the vendor contracts, the exact scripts you want your call center to use, that entire pile of documents is the specification.
Got it. And the implementation would be what actually happens on a random Tuesday at 2:00 p.m., the daily operations.
Exactly.
The staff actually walking the floor, the servers routing the data, the manager dealing with, you know, a delayed shipment.
Yes. And the emergence in a business context, that is the customer experience, the actual lived feeling a consumer has when they interact with your company.
Because that feeling isn't in the manual.
Right. Nowhere in your 25-page standard operating procedure did you explicitly code the precise feeling of frustration a customer gets when the website glitches while they are on hold with a stressed-out agent. The customer experience emerges from the massive, chaotic interaction of the daily operations.
Okay, what about brands? Because I know we have source material here on spectral brand theory, or SBT. Mm-hmm. Does a brand have a specification and an emergence?
Absolutely. In spectral brand theory, a brand's architecture and its emission policy act as the specification. This is the brand Bible.
Like the style guide.
Yeah, it's the guidelines dictating the hex codes of the colors, the tone of voice, the core messaging pillars, the exact intent of what the marketing team wants to communicate to the world.
Okay, so the implementation is the actual advertising campaign.
It's the advertising campaign, yes, but also the customer service emails, the design of the retail stores, the packaging, and even the deliberate silence when a brand chooses not to comment on a cultural issue.
Oh, that's interesting.
It is the totality of the actual signal emission out in the world across all channels. That is the implementation.
And the emergence.
The emergence is the resulting perception cloud. It is how different observer cohorts, different groups of people out in the real world actually feel, think, and talk about the brand. The brand manager's intended specification is completely different from the emergent perception cloud.
Okay, for everyone listening, I want you to visualize this. Picture a three-column diagram in your mind. The left column is labeled specification. This is your bounded code. It's your genome with 20,000 genes, or a business spec with 25 YAML files outlining operations, or a brand architecture with an 8-dimension signal plan.
Perfect.
The middle column is implementation. This is the messy reality. It's a physical body with 37 trillion cells. It's the daily operations of thousands of employees, or it's the actual signal emission of ads and corporate silence.
Right.
And the right column is emergence, the uncoded result. Consciousness from 86 billion neurons, the actual customer experience, or a co-constructed brand perception cloud. Between these columns, imagine arrows pointing left to right, and label those arrows rendering function plus environment.
Yes, that's the process.
But here's the kicker. Between the left column, the specification, and the right column, the emergence, there's a giant gaping void.
Yeah.
And it's marked specification gap irreducible by theorem.
That diagram you just painted is the exact map of the rendering problem. And that gap is the most crucial part of this entire discussion. The specification does not, and mathematically cannot, uniquely determine the emergence.
But wait, I really have to challenge this. Is this gap really an immovable law of nature? Or is it just a failure of human planning? I mean, look at corporate America.
Okay.
If we just write a better, longer specification, if we write a perfectly detailed 500-page operating manual for our employees,
yeah,
or a hyper-exhaustive brand guideline that covers literally every possible edge case, can't we close that gap to zero? Can't we force the emergence to exactly match the specification?
What's fascinating here is that the mathematics strictly forbid it. The gap is structural. Mm. It is not a symptom of laziness or a lack of detail or bad management.
Really? Just math?
Just math. We can look at the mathematical proof from spectral brand theory to understand why exhaustive specification is literally impossible in our universe. SBT models brand perception across 8 distinct dimensions. Organizational schema theory models business operations across 6 cascade levels, from the top-level customer contract down to the absolute bottom level of supply chain sourcing.
Okay, tracking.
When you multiply these out, you get 48 distinct parameters that define a system's state.
48 parameters doesn't sound that high, though. I mean, my car probably has more than 48 parameters.
It's not just 48 isolated variables, though. It's the combinatorial scale of how those 48 parameters interact with each other and with the environment over time.
Ah, the interactions.
Yes. Because of this combinatorial explosion, the number of distinguishable configurations, the different possible states the system can be in, is 10 to the 48th power.
10 to the 48th power. Okay, let's contextualize that for a second. That's a one with 48 zeros after it. I think the number of atoms in the entire Earth is something like 10 to the 50th power, right?
It's in that neighborhood, yes.
So we're talking about a number of possible business or brand states that literally rivals the atomic complexity of a planet.
Exactly. You simply cannot write a specification exhaustive enough to close a parameter space of that magnitude. It doesn't matter if your operating manual is 500 pages or 5 million pages.
Uh-huh.
You will never, ever cover 10 to the 48th power scenarios.
Wow.
The gap between what you specify in the boardroom and what emerges in the real world is mathematically irreducible. It is a fundamental property of the system itself.
Okay, my mind is slightly blown, but this raises a massive logistical question. If the specification doesn't contain the information to build consciousness or to guarantee a specific customer experience, well, that extra information has to come from somewhere, right?
Yes, it doesn't just invent itself.
You said the implementation layer has orders of magnitude more information than the spec.
Yeah.
Where is it getting the raw data to build all that extra complexity? If the blueprint only has 100 bytes of data, but the house has 1 billion bytes of data, where did the other 999 million bytes come from?
That is the pivotal question. If the information isn't in the spec, where is it? The extra information that fills this massive specification gap comes from 3 distinct sources during the rendering process.
Okay, what's the first one?
The first source is the environment.
The environment, how does that work in biology?
In biology, the exact same genome will produce completely different physical bodies depending on environmental inputs. Factors like nutrition, ambient temperature, physical stress, and social context dictate how the organism develops.
So the DNA isn't the whole story.
Not at all. If a plant has the genetic specification to grow 6 feet tall, but it is grown in a dark box with 0 nutrients, it will not reach 6 feet. The environment provides critical information at runtime that the specification simply does not contain. The specification assumes a certain environment, but the environment actually delivers the final data.
And in organizations or brands, that environment is the market conditions, right?
Yes. It's the macroeconomy, it's what your competitors are doing, it's sudden regulatory changes. It's also what spectral brand theory calls ambient signals.
Ambient signals, like background noise.
Exactly. In SBT, there's a metric called the design to ambient ratio, or DA ratio.
Okay.
The design signals are what the brand put in its specification, its ads, its logos. The ambient signals are all the things the brand didn't design, but which actively shape the implementation. This is the Yelp reviews, the word of mouth on social media, the broader cultural context.
Oh, I see.
If you launch a luxury travel brand the same week a global pandemic hits, the ambient signals of the environment completely rewrite your implementation, regardless of what your specification said. The environment is always aggressively injecting information into your system.
Okay, so that's source one. The environment writes a huge chunk of the code at runtime. What is the second source filling the gap?
The second source is self-organization. Yeah. In biological systems, this is crucial. Cells arrange themselves into complex tissues and organs through local interaction rules. There is no central blueprint dictating every single spatial coordinate of your liver.
Wait, really? There isn't a master liver-shaped gene?
Yeah.
No. The DNA provides local rules. It essentially says to a cell, produce this specific protein when you bump into a cell that is emitting this other specific signal. It's a set of local if-then statements.
That's incredible.
The incredibly complex spatial arrangement, the blood vessels, the feedback loops, all of that emerges from the cells just interacting with one another in their immediate vicinity. They self-organize without a boss telling them where to go.
Okay, I immediately see how this translates to business.
Yeah.
In a company, self-organization is all the informal coordination that happens behind management's back.
Exactly.
It's the emergent team dynamics. It's the working knowledge that never makes it into the standard procedure manual. Like, if the official software system is too slow, the employees self-organize and start a private WhatsApp group to get things done faster.
Yes, that is the perfect example.
The company's actual implementation is driven by that WhatsApp group, which was never in the specification.
Precisely. And in brands, self-organization is how observer cohorts, the actual audience cluster, signals together entirely without central control. The brand puts out an ad, but the audience decides what it means based on their own internal social dynamics.
They make the memes.
Exactly. They create memes. They form subcultures around the product. The audience organizes the meaning themselves. The brand manager has no control over it.
Which brings us to the third source of extra information. What is it?
The third source is the configuration layer. In biology, this is the entire field of epigenetics. This layer determines which parts of the underlying specification are actually active at any given time.
Okay, explain epigenetics to me like I'm five. Because I hear that word thrown around a lot in health podcasts, but how does it actually relate to this rendering problem?
Think of your DNA as a massive multi-volume library of cookbooks. Every cell in your body has the exact same library. But obviously, a heart cell is doing something very different than a skin cell. Why?
Because of epigenetic marks.
Epigenetic marks. Yes. These are literal physical or chemical tags, like a process called methylation, that attach to the DNA.
So what do these tags actually do?
Imagine someone going into that massive library and putting physical padlocks on certain chapters of the cookbooks while highlighting other chapters.
Okay.
The recipes, the genes are still there. The specification hasn't changed. But the chef, the cellular machinery, can't open the padlocked books. Epigenetics configures the specification, turning genes on and off based on environmental triggers or developmental stages.
So identical twins. They have the exact same library of cookbooks.
Exactly. Identical twins are the perfect biological proof of this entire rendering gap theory. They have the exact same specification, 100% identical DNA. But over time, their environments and choices cause different padlocks and highlights to be placed in their libraries. Their epigenetic marks diverge. One twin might turn on a gene expression that leads to a certain disease, while the other twin's gene remains padlocked. They end up with entirely different implementations, different disease profiles, different physical characteristics due to a divergent configuration layer.
That is incredible. And how does this configuration layer map to a business? What are the padlocks on a corporate specification?
In business, those epigenetic marks are your operational parameters. Think about pricing algorithms, seasonal shifts, or staffing levels. You have a massive organizational schema, a huge flowchart of how the business can run.
Yeah.
But when you tweak a parameter, say, you drop the price of your core product by 20% for a holiday sale, you are effectively turning certain parts of your organizational DNA on and turning other parts off. Suddenly, the shipping department is working overtime, the premium customer service tier is deactivated, and the marketing team pivots.
So the code is the same, just running differently.
Exactly. The underlying specification of the company didn't change, but the configuration layer completely altered the implementation.
Here's where it gets really interesting. Listening to you explain this, I realize we have been using the wrong metaphor for centuries. We always talk about blueprints. We say we're designing the blueprint for our business or the blueprint for our brand. But a blueprint implies that every single detail of the final house, every nail, every wire, every exact measurement is drawn out in advance. The blueprint is the house, just on paper.
And that is a fatal misconception when dealing with complex systems.
Right. A specification isn't a blueprint at all. It is a coordinate system. It tells you where you are on the map. But the environment raining down on you, the self-organization of the builders on the site, and the configuration layer of your budget, those are what actually build the house on those coordinates. You don't get to draw the house, you just get to pick the plot of land.
That is the perfect distinction. The specification provides the coordinates, the rendering process builds the territory. You cannot control the territory. And to truly understand how universal this is, how deeply embedded this mathematical reality is in our world, we need to trace this rendering hierarchy across four specific domains. We've touched on them briefly, but looking at them as a unified framework reveals how inescapable this is.
Okay, let's dive deep into these four domains. Let's start with the deepest, oldest instance, BIO, or the body, as metadata thesis. When I read this part of the research, it honestly messed with my head a little bit. We think of our bodies as permanent things, But the research points out that every 7 to 10 years, almost every single cell in the human body is completely replaced.
Yes. You are literally not the same physical entity you were a decade ago.
The numbers are wild. Your gut lining, the cells processing your food, is completely replaced every 5 days. Which, frankly, given some of the takeout I eat, I'm very grateful that my gut gets a factory reset every week.
Yeah, nature is very forgiving there.
But red blood cells are replaced every 120 days. Your skin is constantly shedding.
The material of the implementation is entirely disposable. The body is in a state of continuous, relentless cellular turnover. Millions of cells are dying and being reborn as we speak. So the philosophical question is, what actually persists through all of that replacement? If the physical stuff is disposable, what is permanent?
It's a specification.
Exactly. The genome, the human body, your physical form is essentially just disposable metadata that is continuously re-executing a persistent specification. The body is just a temporary rendering of the code.
And that leads directly into the second domain, which maps perfectly, OST, or organizational schema theory. Just like the human body continuously replaces its cells, an organization is constantly replacing its parts. Employees quit and are replaced. Old laptops are swapped for new ones. Entire office buildings are leased and abandoned. But the organization persists. Why? Because the organization is just metadata for its processes.
Precisely. In OST, they map this out as a six-level cascade. It starts at level zero, which is the ultimate customer experience contract, the fundamental promise the business makes to the world. Then it cascades down through level one, level two, all the way to level five, which is raw sourcing and supply chain.
Okay.
People come and go, assets degrade, but that underlying process specification, that six-level cascade, persists. The actual value of a corporation is in the process, not the org chart.
The org chart is just the gut lining. It's disposable.
Exactly. The organization is just the disposable execution layer built around the persistent process. If you understand that, you stop trying to micromanage the disposable parts and start rigorously managing the underlying process specification.
Okay, the third domain is SBT, spectral brand theory.
Yeah.
And I want to spend some time here because this is where a lot of companies burn millions of dollars. The brand architecture is the specification. It is emitting signals across eight dimensions. What are those dimensions again?
The math in SBT defines them as semiotic, narrative, ideological, experiential, social, economic, cultural, and temporal. Every single thing a brand does emits a signal on one or more of these frequencies.
Okay, so the brand is broadcasting on these eight radio stations constantly.
Yeah.
But here's the problem. The brand manager doesn't get to decide how the song sounds to the listener, because observers, the customers, filter these signals through their own unique spectral profiles.
Yes. Every human being has a different spectral profile. They have different sensitivities to certain signals, different prior experiences, different cultural tolerances. A signal that reads as luxurious to one observer cohort might read as pretentious and out of touch to another.
So the brand manager's pure intent, the beautiful specification they designed in a sterile conference room, gets blasted out into the noisy environment, filtered through the messy self-organization of society, and is rendered into a perception cloud that is totally different from what they wanted.
Exactly. And this brings us to the fourth domain, which is perhaps the most intimate and relatable for our listeners, ASP, or the Activity Specification Protocol. This brings the rendering problem down to the personal level. This is about your professional identity and your career.
Oh, this is fascinating. Let's spend some time here, because we all deal with resumes and LinkedIn profiles, and they always feel so, inadequate.
They feel inadequate because they are incredibly lossy, collapsed specifications. Think about what you specify that you do. Your formal job title, your stated methods, the bullet points on your CV, that is your specification. But how does that actually render in the real world?
It renders into a career trajectory.
Yes, but more importantly, it renders into a professional identity in the minds of the people you work with. Your colleagues don't interact with your resume. They interact with your implementation. They experience how you handle stress in a meeting, how you self-organize a messy project, how you configure your time.
Let's use an example. Let's say we have two people, person A and person B. They both have the exact same resume summary. They both went to the same college, got the same degree, and have the exact same job title, senior brand strategist. That is their shared specification.
Exactly. A perfectly identical specification on paper.
But over a 5-year career trajectory, the rendering gap explodes. Mm-hmm. Person A works at an agency where the environment is highly collaborative. That's the environment source. They naturally form deep, informal mentorship bonds with junior staff. That's the self-organization source. And they decide to focus their energy heavily on data analytics rather than creative copywriting, which is the configuration layer.
While person B, with the exact same title, works in a cutthroat environment, self-organizes by hoarding information to protect their status, and configures their time strictly toward client schmoozing.
Right. So 5 years later, they both still have the same underlying specification, senior brand strategist, but their implementations are wildly different. The emergent reality is that person A is viewed as an indispensable analytical team leader, while person B is viewed as a toxic but highly connected lone wolf. The CV is just a collapsed rendering of a multidimensional activity specification. It tells you almost nothing about the emergent reality of the human being.
In all four domains, the biology of your cells, the operations of a global business, the perception of a luxury brand, and the trajectory of your own career, the underlying structure is identical. A compressed specification is rendered through a noisy environment into a highly complex implementation, producing unpredictable emergence.
But wait, I have to play the skeptic here. I have to ask the question that I know some of our listeners are shouting at their phones right now. Are we just using a really clever poetic biological metaphor here to describe business? Is comparing a corporate org chart to the gut lining of a human stomach just a neat analogy designed to make a business book sound smarter? Because it sounds great at a dinner party, but is it actually real?
If we connect this to the bigger picture, I have to firmly correct that assumption. This is absolutely not a metaphor. It is a structural homology.
So structural homology, meaning what exactly?
We are not saying that a business is like an organism. We are saying that the exact same mathematical structure, the specification gap, the rendering function, the emergent properties, appears independently in all four of these domains. The underlying physics of the information transfer are identical.
It's a literal shared structure.
Yes, it is a verifiable scientific observation supported by over 20 peer-reviewed research papers on Zenodo. The rendering problem describes a formal, inescapable pattern of relationships between system components. It's just math. Biology just happens to be the domain with the longest-running, most observable data set. Biology has had 3.8 billion years of implementation turnover around persistent specifications. We are just now realizing that human-made organizations follow the exact same physical laws of information.
Okay, so if we accept this, if we accept that this is a mathematical reality, a structural homology across biology, business, brands, and careers, how does this change the way we actually build things? Because the naive assumption, the way almost every single person designs a system, a brand, or a business, is that they try to specify the exact output they want.
Yes, the naive assumption is the belief in the illusion of control.
Right. A CEO writes a memo dictating exactly what the company culture should be. A marketing director writes a brand guideline to dictate exactly what the customer should feel when they see a billboard. They're trying to write the emergence into the specification.
And that naive assumption is exactly what the rendering problem completely invalidates. Because of the irreducible 10 to the 48th power gap, you cannot specify the output. You mathematically cannot specify the customer's experience, and you cannot specify the brand perception cloud. So what do you do instead? You can only specify the constraints.
Constraint design.
Yes, you design the boundaries. You specify the conditions that make desirable emergence highly probable and undesirable emergence highly improbable.
Yeah.
You aren't forcing a path. You are tilting the floor so the ball naturally rolls where you want it to go.
Let's apply constraint design to business using organizational schema theory. The research brief points out that this borrows heavily from software engineering, specifically a concept called test-driven development, or TDD.
Test-driven development is a paradigm shift. In traditional software, you write the procedures and then you test to see if they work. In TDD, you don't write the procedures first. You write the tests first. You define exactly what a pass looks like, and then you let the code evolve to meet that test.
And applied to an organization, this means you design contracts, not procedures. You specify what the outcome must be, the acceptance test, but you do not write a micromanaging 50-page manual of exactly how the employee must get there. You allow the implementation layer, the human beings, to self-organize and figure out the how as long as they meet the constraints of the test.
Exactly. Let's go back to that six-level cascade. The ultimate customer experience goal acts as the level zero acceptance test. Every operational parameter below that level one down to level five must trace its justification upward to that test. You aren't dictating the exact physical movements of the barista making the coffee. You are specifying the constraints. The coffee must be this temperature delivered in this time frame with this level of friendliness.
And the barista figures out the rest.
Right. The barista uses their own complex human implementation to meet those constraints.
And this applies just as rigorously to brand strategy. In brand strategy, as you said, you cannot specify a perception cloud. If you want people to think your brand is prestigious or cool, you can't just write "be prestigious" in a brand book and expect the audience to obey.
No, because prestige is emergent. You can only specify a signal architecture that shifts the probability distribution in the minds of the observers. You set constraints on what you emit.
And the most fascinating example of this in the research is something called structural absence. This blew my mind. Structural absence is the deliberate restriction of signals. It's specifying what you will not do. Let's use the ultimate example, Hermes.
Hermes is the masterclass in constraint design and structural absence.
Right. Think about walking into a Hermes boutique, or even just looking at their broader brand footprint. They emit absolutely zero signals regarding discounts. They don't have big red sale signs in the window. They don't send you emails about a Black Friday blowout. They don't even really talk about their prices. That silence is a structural absence. The specification, the rule in their brand Bible, is a negative constraint. Restrict the pricing signal.
What happens in the implementation layer when an observer encounters that absence?
The human brain hates a vacuum. When the observer, the customer, encounters that silence, they fill the gap themselves. They look at the beautiful leather, they notice the quiet atmosphere of the store, they see the lack of price tags, and their brain self-organizes those ambient signals into a perception of extreme prestige, exclusivity, and scarcity. If they don't list the price, I must not be able to afford it. It must be incredibly valuable.
Exactly. Hermes didn't specify "we are prestigious." They specified silence. And the specification of silence makes the emergence of prestige highly probable within the observer's mind. They manage the coordinate system perfectly.
I want to highlight a quote from the research here, because it is the thesis statement of this entire deep dive. You cannot specify the customer's experience. You can only specify the conditions that make a good experience structurally likely. That is such a massive, humbling shift in perspective. It means we have to stop trying to micromanage the emergence. We have to let go of the illusion of control and start rigorously managing the coordinate system.
It is the difference between trying to play every instrument in the orchestra yourself versus writing a beautiful piece of sheet music and trusting the musicians to interpret it.
But applying this framework to the real world raises some really serious questions. So I want to push back on a few of these concepts. Let's poke some holes in this. First, as I was reading this, my mind immediately went to the AI frame problem.
Yes, a classic problem in artificial intelligence.
Right. The rendering problem sounds a whole lot like it might just be a restatement of the frame problem. For our listeners, the frame problem in AI is basically the impossibility of specifying all relevant real-world contexts for a robot. The classic example is a robot trying to defuse a bomb on a wagon. It knows it needs to pull the wagon out of the room to save the people, but it doesn't realize that pulling the wagon also pulls the bomb because it couldn't frame all the implications of its actions in its environment. Is the rendering problem just the frame problem wearing a different hat? And if AI eventually gets smart enough to solve the frame problem, does this specification gap close to zero?
That is a highly perceptive question, as it touches on whether AI provides better implementation or better specification. While they share similarities, they are fundamentally distinct mathematical issues.
How so?
The frame problem is about the impossibility of bounding context. The robot doesn't know what it doesn't know about the wagon. The rendering problem, however, is about the differential in descriptive complexity between a bounded source and its physical output.
Okay, so how does AI impact that differential?
Let's say AI advances to a godlike level. It might generate vastly more complete specifications. It might write a 10 billion page business manual that accounts for every conceivable market condition. But the gap doesn't shrink to zero. Why? Because the implementation medium itself, the physical reality of atoms, the messy biology of human employees, introduces structural constraints and novel byproducts that simply don't exist in the digital realm of the spec.
Right. Atoms aren't code.
Exactly. If AI generates a massive, perfect specification, it just becomes a different, larger specification that still must be rendered into an even more complex, chaotic reality. It doesn't solve the rendering problem. It just creates a new rendering gap at a massively higher level of complexity.
Okay, that makes sense. AI can write a better cookbook, but it still can't force the cake to bake identically every single time.
Yeah.
Because the oven and the flour are part of the chaotic physical world. Okay, here's another counterexample. Let's look at evolutionary optimization. You say the gap is structural and mathematically irreducible. But look at evolutionary biology. Over 3.8 billion years, millions of generations, The human genome has been relentlessly optimized by natural selection to specify increasingly reliable developmental outcomes. Most humans are born with two arms, two legs, and a functioning heart. Doesn't that show that the gap can be reduced, even if it's not fully closed? Evolution figured out how to make the rendering highly predictable. And if so, what does that mean for design cycles in a business? Can't a business just iterate its way over decades to a near-zero gap?
Evolution is a brilliant tinkerer, but we have to be incredibly precise about what it actually optimized over those 3.8 billion years. Evolution optimized the reliability of the rendering, not the exhaustiveness of the specification.
What is the difference?
It created robust mechanisms, like a biological process called canalization, to ensure that even with massive environmental noise, the system usually reaches a stable phenotype or physical form. It didn't write more code to micromanage the development. It wrote resilient code that can handle errors. In business terms, yes, more precise specifications and iterative design cycles, learning from your mistakes year after year, will narrow the variance of the emergent outcomes.
They make the system more robust.
Exactly. They ensure the business doesn't collapse when the market shifts, but they do not eliminate the gap. The implementation still contains orders of magnitude more information than the specification. Evolution didn't close the gap. It just built an implementation layer that is really good at surfing the chaos of the gap.
So what does this all mean? Let's take this to the absolute philosophical extreme. Let's say we have godlike computing power. We have an omniscient AI. If we perfectly model the environment down to the subatomic level, and we perfectly model the self-organization dynamics of every human being, and we perfectly model the exact spectral profile of the observer, does the gap go away then? Is this just an epistemological problem, meaning we just aren't smart enough or our computers aren't fast enough to measure it yet? Or is it an ontological problem, meaning it is a fundamental, unbreakable law of the universe?
It is fundamentally ontological. It is a law of the universe. It is non-specifiable due to two main factors: combinatorial scale, which we discussed with the 10 to the 48th power, and non-ergodic dynamics.
Okay, ELI 5 time again. Non-ergodic dynamics. What does that mean?
Ergodic means that a system visits all possible states over time and the average outcome is predictable. Non-ergodic means the path matters and the sequence of events permanently alters the future. Think of it like a stochastic diffusion process.
Still too much jargon.
Fair enough. Imagine dropping a single drop of dark blue ink into a glass of water. You know the ink will spread. You know the water will eventually turn light blue. But you cannot, even with a supercomputer, predict the exact microscopic path of every single particle of that ink as it swirls through the water molecules. It is a multidimensional, unpredictable swirl. That is a stochastic diffusion process.
Okay, I can visualize that perfectly.
Now make it non-ergodic. Imagine that as the ink spreads, it permanently changes the temperature of the water it touches, which in turn changes how the rest of the ink spreads. The sequence of events matters. If the ink hits a cold patch first, it spreads differently than if it hits a warm patch first. Brand perception, customer experience, and biological development are all path-dependent multiplicative processes over time. A single bad PR tweet from a brand forever changes the context of how their next positive tweet is received. You can't just hit undo.
Oh, wow. Yep.
Even with perfect models, you are dealing with a reality where the act of rendering changes the rules of the environment in real time. The gap isn't a measurement error or a lack of computing power. It is a structural reality of how information scales from a bounded source into a realized physical environment.
It's incredible to think about how this framework scales seamlessly from the absolute micro to the macro. Every operations failure is three rendering gaps made visible simultaneously. What the spec said, what the execution produced, what the customer felt, whether it's a barista making a coffee differently than the 50-page manual intended, or a multi-million-dollar brand ad campaign that catastrophically backfires because the audience's cultural spectral profile was ignored, you are watching the rendering problem play out in real time. We are constantly fighting the gap when we should be designing constraints around it.
And this leaves us with a profound, almost unsettling question as we enter this new era of ubiquitous artificial intelligence. If the physical implementation is inherently disposable, like our cells turning over every few years, or a company's daily procedures constantly shifting and adapting to the market, and only the specification persists, what happens to human identity or corporate legacy when AI can instantly generate an infinite number of perfect implementations from a single underlying specification?
Oh, wow.
If the AI can render the metadata flawlessly and continuously, iterating a million companies a second, Where does the soul of the system actually live? Is it in the static, bounded code of the specification, or does it only exist in the unpredictable, chaotic, emergent gap of the rendering itself? If we eliminate the human struggle of the implementation, do we eliminate the emergence of the soul?
That is a haunting thought to leave on. The soul lives in the gap. Episode 13 takes the rendering problem in a different direction. What happens when the rendered artifact is a book, and AI can now execute the generating function directly? And if you want the formal cross-domain treatment, episode 4 connects SBT and OST at this exact structural point. If you want to trace this pattern into the brand perception domain specifically, lecture 1 covers spectral brand theory. If you want the accessible version, how the rendering problem appears in everyday brand experience, episode 11 covers that ground without the formal machinery.